الحمد لله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم. Some months ago we did one very short treatment on the subject of Marja'iyah. Now, at that time, I did not understand, nor did I have any appreciation of the whole situation as to how far do our takes go and how far is our lecture reported. I understand that it goes to many households and many people call for it and ask for it. Well, I didn't have any feedback. And I do not know what is the feeling of the people who came to know about my views on Marja'iyah. Later on, in one of my interviews, I said something about Marja'iyah, which was published in the Shia International. It was on a different subject, but the last question that I was asked was about Marja'iyah. Now, Marja'iyah means a mujtahid or a scholar or a clergy or an alim whose taqleed we do, who follow in the matters of jurisprudence, and he becomes a point of reference for all the questions that we might be having. He is a leader, a sole leader. I was asked the question about how do I view the institution of Marja'iyah in the coming century. And I said there what I said here. Quite contrary to my expectation, breakfast created a very big row, especially in East Africa. And there have been objections on that. And of course, objections are always welcome because we don't have to say that what we say is right and no one has the right to object to it. But rather than having a scholarly discussion or discussion on some very intellectual level, we have been told only one thing, that this statement goes against our faith and goes against our aqidah. That is not true. I have tried to explain to them, they haven't understood yet. So what I would suggest, that it must be first made very clear that these views that I'm expressing are not for you to take as gospel, unless you have understood thoroughly. And if you have any objections, you can write down, you can ask, I mean, it's not there. One thing I am convinced about is that whether we like it or we don't like it, with the turn of the century, this institution is going to be exactly the way I predict. Because the times are changing. At that time, inshallah, people will realize that whatever we have foreseen now was absolutely true. So for the sake of recapitulating, rather reminiscing whatever we said last time, I believe I'll have to repeat a few things. First and foremost, to say that because we have been following a particular pattern of Marja'iyah and therefore it must not change is not right. According to Quran, when Hazrat Musa, with his brother Harun, came to the people there to say that we have come with this faith and this religion and that Fir'aun is not God, there is only one God. The answer they gave was, as Quran says in Surah Yunus, they said, قَالُوا أَجِئْتَنَا لِتَلْفِتَنَا عَمَّا وَجَدْنَا عَلَيْهِ آبَاءَنَا. Have you two come to us to make us turn away from what our parents used to do, our ancestors used to do? Should we abandon the practice of our ancestors? You have come to drive away from the ancient tradition that we have been following. وَتَكُونَ لَكُمَا الْكِبْرِيَاءَ فِي الْأَرْضِ. It seems that you have come to digress us from there, to distract us from there, so that you become the great ones on this earth. We shall not believe in. To say that you have been following this particular track for years and therefore it must be right is not right. That argument is absolutely not valid. For several reasons, which we shall be discussing tonight. But we will come to certain very sensitive areas tonight, and I know that I'm stretching my neck. Whether you like to tape it or you don't like to tape it, I leave it up to you. But if it is taped, and if it reaches the people who can't swallow it, it's going to be a problem for me. But I'm not going to ask you to do anything. You can continue taping. I'm not worried about it. But I'm only trying to portray that there are certain sections in the community who have still not been able to understand. But that will come later. Now, what people do not know is that when the Ghaibah took place, the Ghaibah of Imam Sa'id al-Zaman, salawatullah salam alayhi, naturally, we know that there are two phases of Ghaibah. One was Ghaibah al-Sughra, another was Ghaibah al-Kubra, that means major occultation and the minor occultation. The major occultation took place in 329 Hijra. This is 1413. So when the major occultation took place, it was 329 Hijra, nearly, let us say, 1100 years ago. Now, the historians tell us, historians tell us, that the Muslim world at that time, although it was spread all over the world, but it did not have that idea of pan-Islamism to say that we are all one ummah. There were different kingdoms. And the Abbasid Empire had already started disintegrating, already, from the center. In fact, it had started exactly at 255 Hijra, that means just as our Imam was born, 12th Imam. Perhaps you know this, that among all those problems that Abbasids at that time in Samarra, or before coming to Samarra, they faced, one was the revolt by East African slaves in Baghdad. The slaves who had come from Zanzibar. And they were called Zanj or Zunuj. And Zanzibar is actually Zanzibar, it's Zanjibar, Zanj. The slaves of East Africa were in Baghdad and other places. They rebelled and revolted against the Arab masters because they were mistreated. And there were not few, there were many. In thousands, and the unrest had begun years ago, but they were waiting for one Arab to lead, because they knew that they would not be able to face the Arabs. They wanted one Arab to lead that, and they found one, and that Arab led the whole rebel, and of course this is very well known, that for 54 years, the Abbasid Empire had to move from Baghdad to Samarra. And not only that, but instances are there, we know it. The kings for 2 years, kings for 1 year, kings for a few days. Being dethroned, being overthrown. On one side, the rebels. On the other side, the Turks, who had been recruited in the army. They became the masters of Abbasid Empire. The king would be brought to the throne by the Turk ministers and Turk soldiers, and again overthrown after 2 years or a year. It went on in the days of Mutawakkil and others. So we know this, that it started disintegrating, fragmentation. And there came a time when only the Khalifa's name was cited in Juma prayers. Otherwise, everywhere there was a different kingdom. Well, when you know this, the boundaries and geographical boundaries of between Iraq and Iran were not as rigid as they are today. Many parts which are in Soviet Union today were not in Soviet Union, they were supposed to be part of Iran. Many such cities which are known as Iraqis today, they were all in Iran. And this is the reason why among the ulama, the scholars of Islam, you find names of those people who today, if you look at the geographical maps, you find that they belong to Soviet Union, but they did not belong to Soviet Union then. There was no Union of Soviet Union Republic at that time. But you find those names, Azerbaijani, Taftazani, Diyarbakri, and all these, Diyarbakir and all these places today are in Soviet Union, but today in those days, they were all in Islamic rules and in Iran. So what happened was that the great scholars of Islam, especially the Shias, they ruled, or rather they had that control in small cities, small towns, and even villages. There was nothing like one marja. It was not possible, it wasn't possible. Suppose in those days, we were in India, our ancestors. For them to travel to those places at that time was not possible. Some of them were not even Shia nationalists. We know that even the non-Khoyas, I mean those who are other Shias, like from Uttar Pradesh, that is UP and others, even they did not know at that time that there was any mujtahid anywhere except the ulama knew. And in India, people did taqleed, that means they followed Indian ulama, like Najmul Millat, Ghufran Mahab and others. So every country looked towards an alim in his place, in his town or whatever, and that alim was then point of reference. They came to him for masail and whatever he said, and he collected the monies, khums or whatever was paid to him, and he distributed the way he liked. With the advance in technology, and when travel became easy, and communications became very easy, then we find that, of course, the concept and the idea of marja'iyyah as a central organization ruling the whole world at a time became feasible and it was applied. So about 200 years ago, we find that this happened, that one mujtahid, supposed to be the greatest of all clergy, was accepted by the people and by other scholars, and he was declared as a marja of Ummah. And even then, it does not mean that other ulama and mujtahideen were not there. This change has taken place at the ulama level. Traveling became easy. People traveled from India, from Africa, they went to Najaf Ashraf, they saw an alim. They asked, they said, he is our mujtahid. They came home with his risala, with his book, and said, here is the book of Amal, we follow him. It became possible. You wanted to write to him, you wrote a letter that reached him, he answered you. You cabled him, he replied by cable. You flew or you traveled by ship, you went and so. So the concept of marja'iyyah, the way it is one for the whole alam, for the whole world, the most famous one, like the way we have today. Then it became possible because of the easy traveling and easy communication and all that. Otherwise, it wasn't there. So, my argument to those gentlemen who say that I am talking against Aqidah is that if it is a matter of Aqidah, then how come it has changed? The concept in the earlier days was different and the concept today is different. If there is Aqidah, Aqidah does not change, my friends. It seems that these things have been necessitated by time and according to circumstances, we change. Not to say that those who practiced earlier by having their own alim in their village were wrong, I don't say that. But that was the way it could be done and that was the possible way of doing it. Today, mashallah, it became possible that you can have one madrasa. That is the way how it should be done. Now, leaving this aside, I just wanted to say this, that I am not against aqidah. This is not a matter of aqidah. My friends, when you talk of niyaba, deputization, four deputies after our imam were those who were appointed by the imam, they are called naibe khas, special deputies. Other ulama who are following today, up till our Gulpaigani and inshallah many more to come, they are not nawab-e khas, they are nawab-e am. They are not appointed by imam. They have the qualification which were described by the imam, and because of the qualifications, they have come to that situation position. But they were not appointed. Appointment is something else. Those four nawab who we know, they are actually appointed. So there is a difference. When people come and say, Naibe Imam, you are talking against the Niyaba, I am not talking against Niyaba. Niyaba Khas is something else. This is Niyaba Am. In Niyaba Khas, there can be one at a time. In Niyaba Am, mashallah, at one time we have so many mushtahid. Anyone who qualifies is a mushtahid. Now, no one can tell, even father cannot tell son that you have to do the taqlid of so and so. It is his judgment, right? That is one change. The other change that has come all over is political. No nation or no people now live in their own country. They live in various countries. If we are Indians or Pakistan, whatever they call us, or East Africans, when we went to East Africa, we are not East Africans, we went to East Africa, we made it our home. We are from India, South Pakistan. Pakistan was not there at that time. Then we moved and we came to this country. Most of us are nationals of this country. Some of us are in America and Canada, and some of us are in Middle East and wherever. And wherever they could get nationality, they took it. So the people are scattered and spread all over. The faith has not changed, but the country of abode has changed. And the culture to which we are all exposed has changed. And our intermingling, or our exposure to various faiths has come to be true. You cannot avoid it, you can't ignore it. All that is true. There are, unfortunately, those places which call themselves Islamic, or rather having predominant Muslim population, they are the worst places, we must admit. You see, where torture, torment, injustice, intolerance is at its peak. I mean, what is it? We know it. And there are those places like England or whatever where we are told that we are free to say something, we are free to move about. But you don't realize, and I don't either, that how much of exposure we have to the media and how much we are bombarded daily by that propaganda in the most subtle manner. Trying to acculturize people, trying to tell them that they should forget their own values and accept new values, which is a fact. Now, it is also a fact that Europe will never allow Muslim state in Europe. After Spain, Bosnia is one example. There is nothing wrong with Bosnia. They are whites. Have you seen them? They are whites. If they stand here, you cannot distinguish them from an American or a British or French or whoever. But they are Muslims. And Europe will not tolerate this. This is America will not tolerate. They will never allow an establishment, however small, of an independent Muslim state in Israel. It is a fact. in the name of humanitarian services, then they send them clothes and food and whatever, or something else. It is just pulling wool over our eyes. At the same time, as long as oil is the governing factor in the world and it is needed, in the Middle East country, what George Bush said, New World Order, means the control of the resources of the country for the interest of the non-Islamic world at large. It is a fact, my friend, and therefore any Islamic tendency in any country will not be tolerated by the West. This is a fact. Right? There was a gentleman whose name was Michael Aflaq. Michael Aflaq. But because he was born in France, therefore they don't say Michael, they say Michel. And in Arabic also it is Michel Aflaq. Ayn fe lam qaf Aflaq. He was a man who started the party which is called Ba'athist Party. He was Christian, but more than a Christian, he was a Freemason. And he started the Ba'athist Party and he joined it with Arab Communist Party. And he started as Arab National Communist Party. He was given an award, a gold medal, for having disrupted and unsettled the whole situation in Middle East country. And he provoked nationalism and Arabism and whatever you call it in the name of resurrection. Ba'ath means revival. Okay. Today, torture, ta'zim, but it's torture. And I used to read the books on torture when I didn't have an experience in Iraq myself. I used to consider those books as books of fiction, because I could not believe that any man could do so much against his fellow being. It just did not enter my mind. But I used to read those books which explained how people in Argentina and Chile were being tortured. When I went through it myself in Iraq, I realized what is the meaning of torture, how a man can subject his fellow being to torture to an extent that it can be described. That. But today, in this world, torture is everywhere. You don't believe if they tell you it's not here. It's everywhere. But the torture which is going on in Muslim countries today is at its peak, its highest. You can't imagine what is going on. So wherever you look, you find that the political problem is there. I don't want to go into details, but all that we are doing today is just performance of our duty when we raise our voice of protest, when we come out in demonstration, when we go and meet our MPs, when we go to the parliament sessions, when we try to secure the support of the MPs, when we try to send goods from here. All that is our part of duty. But it does not solve the political problem. And if you are in the third world country, developing countries as they call it, then your economy is also tied with the politics of the country. Now, advancements in technology and science and human thinking. Because of the advanced scientific movements, technological advancement, new discoveries of the laws of nature in various fields, medical and other, new messiahs have come up, new questions have come up, which have got to be dealt with. I gave example last time of simple things like moral implications and legal implications of test tube babies, which involves heritage, inheritance, which also involves marriage questions, and so on. Even dying has become a problem, whether mercy killing by doctors could be allowed or not, whether abortion in the case of a woman who has been dishonored, and she has conceived against her pleasure, against her will, what should she do with the child? It's a daily occurrence today. And all those things which we have today, travel in the space, and if it becomes possible in some time to come, human existence on planets and on moons and whatever. They have created new problems. Now, I have just put on a scene, fragmented scenario before you from various sides in brevity and brief. Establishment of governments. I'm not talking of marja'iyah the way Imam Khomeini talked, because Imam Khomeini was talking about government, Islamic. I'm not talking the way Shahid Sadr used to talk, because he used to visualize Islamic. Today, every marja'iyah cannot be expected to be ruling as an Islamic chief or Islamic king or Islamic ruler. A marja'iyah is a marja'iyah, not as kingdom or as a ruling monarch or as government. Because always, before the revolution of Iran, our marja'iyah were not in an Islamic movement like Wali Faqih. But Imam Khomeini, he was talking even as a government, envisaging Islamic government, even there, he was talking about one thing. Change the pattern and change the syllabus of your hawza, he is saying. I am going to read something which he says, and it is written in his own book, which has been quoted here. And why should he say this? He says, O ulama and all clergy of Najaf, wake up and rise. For how long is it going to be your duty only to teach the masail of salat and psalm, purity, ghusl, ablutions, inheritance and nikah? Is that the only duty that has been entrusted to you? For how long is your view and your vision going to be insular and narrow? Are you aware of what is happening around you? If the time has come that those ulama and those members of the clergy who preach that the duty of an alim is only to have a rosary or tasbih in his hand, and only do tasbih la ilaha illallah every time, and remain at home and teach the people to be only otherworldly, he says such ulama should be not only removed from the houses, but their imamas must be also pulled. He says, pull down their imamas, that means the turbans, because they should not even mislead the masses. Because when they wear that dress,
people who say that they are one of those people, because of course the dress has got its own significance. He said, "Pull in tazi'u imamatahum." You just remove the imam. Why did he say this? This book of his has been translated into English also. You can read it. It's not a very big, large volume. It's a small book. Again, he talks about the political changes. He has given an example in his 1963 speech, which he gave, in which he wept bitterly, and the people sitting around him wept. And with the result of that lecture which he gave in 1963, he was expelled and he had to go out. What did he say? He said, "The time has come that if an American drives a car in this country, in Iran, and kills a pedestrian who is an Iranian, he cannot be tried here. He has got to be sent back to his own country to be tried. But if you were to kill an Iranian or do anything, an American or anything, then you are going to be tried here." And then he gives an example. He says, "If an Ayatollah were killed by an American, it is as good as having killed a cat. Nothing can happen to him." In a sovereign country like Iran, for example, the influence of a foreigner has come to be bearing and overbearing to an extent that you cannot speak a word, and we are all silent, just saying that, oh, our duty is... So now, my question to you all is it true, or is it not true, that Islam, state and religion go together? I'm not talking about what Caesar said, that give unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar and give to Christ what belongs to Christ. We don't want to say that. Even here, they say constantly, even Saudi Arab government will tell you, come to Hajj only for tawaf. Do your a'mal and go back. You have come for what? For pilgrimage? Tafadhal. If you talk about politics, out. Is it not true? We have been told every day that state and religion don't mix. But in Islam, is it different? No. A deen, who was siyasa? Was siyasa to hear deen? Deen is politics and religion is politics and politics is religion. Because we have been told this 100 times. Is it so? So now marjaliyat is what? What is a marjaliyat? If it is for deen, is siyasa together with it or not? That is my question. If siyasa goes together in deen, then a mustahid alam or a marja is a person who is supposed to know how many things. Now Shaykh al-Sadr writes, I respect Shaykh al-Sadr. I respect him as one of the genius, the scholars of incomparable stature as far as we are concerned. Matchless. But as I say, you have a right to disagree with what I say, and I have a right to disagree with what he said. He said a Muslim has got to be an astute politician. He has got to be a faqih of higher stature and degree. He has got to be one of the best administrators and organizers. And he has got to be the one who is fully aware of the situation around him, scientific, technological advancements, everything. And he has got to be the one who would appoint people around him to help him and serve him for the purpose of service to Ummah. Now just tell me, can you get one man always like that? You cannot. Forgive me if I say that after the passing away of Imam Al-Khomeini, even Iran could not get one like him. One like him, they could not get. As long as he lived, the qualities that he possessed are not to be found in the qualities of his successors. Not in one man. I mean, a group can arise to fulfill what he fulfilled alone. So, as they say in Urdu, Hazaron saal nargis apni benuri pe roti hai. Badi mushkil se hota hai chaman mein deedar paida. It's very difficult that you don't get that sort of man every time. Genius are not born every year. Now that is the genius that he had. He was an astute politician. He was not a scientist. In his will you can read. He says that we don't have all that the West has. And therefore whatever they offer which is good for you, for your subsistence and for your existence, accept it. It is in his will. So this is the reason why I say that marjaiyat has got to be an institution. What people understood is that now I'm going to advocate the taqlid of a committee rather than taqlid of one person. Taqlid is something else, my friends. And what I'm talking about is something else. I am saying that taqlid will remain as it is. There is no way out. It is a common sense, matter of common sense, I mean. If I say I am going to rely upon a committee of doctors for prescribing to me a medicine, I will die the next day. Because the doctors are sometimes bound to disagree on the mode of treatment. I will take one doctor. But because of the diverse political and economical, cultural, religious and all sorts of problems we are facing, and we are not talking of us, means us here only, mashallah, how many Muslims do you have of various ethnic origins and nationality, Afghanistan, Indonesia, Malaysia, Japan, whatever. And you will have to accept that everyone has a peculiar problem. How can one man look after, unless you all agree that no, we only want marjaiyat for taqleed, then I don't have any dispute. I am talking of marjaiyat as an authority which will look after all the multifarious affairs of the Ummah. This is what Ayatollah Khomeini was talking about. The marjaiyat is not only for taqlid. Therefore I am not defeating the aqidah itself. I know that this is the only way out. I am not a mujtahid. What will I do? I will do taqlid. But this is not a matter of taqlid. This is a matter of looking after the affairs of the Ummah. And let me tell you very openly, I mean recorded that. Had it been an efficient and efficient institution, we would not have been where we are today. Now, I'm saying something. I told you, we arrived at a very sensitive situation. What is happening in Bosnia? What is happening in Kashmir? Do you know that? To the Muslims? In Afghanistan, it was Soviet Union. In Vietnam, it was United States of America. In Bosnia, it is all the Western countries put together, Serbs and non-Serbs and Croats, whatever. In Kashmir, it is the Hindus. Whatever is happening anywhere to Islam and to Muslims, have you ever seen one statement of protest worth its name from anywhere which you can say this is a central organization covering the whole Ummah where there is a voice which has been heard? No. I mean, don't try to misunderstand me. To issue one small circular and send it around the Jamaat is not that voice. The voice comes when, whether we like it or we don't like it. But something happened somewhere in Sudan we were discussing just now. The Pope comes out from there and from the Vatican and says, now whether you believe in Pope or you don't believe in Pope, you are going to give him one credit that his voice is heard somewhere. At least he issues a statement of condemnation to say, this is wrong, either in the name of humanity or in the name of Christian religion or Catholicism, whatever. But there is a voice which reverberates. And people simply start thinking that, there is someone who is watching. Tell me what is happening in the Islamic Ummah. Nothing. So, the other thing which I wanted to tell you is,
that in Farsi they say, Piran nani parand, muridami parand. Peer does not fly, it is the murid who makes the peer fly. That means, most of the time, the adverse effect doesn't come from the man himself, it comes from the tantras, or the people around him, the tattoo, the leggings. You see, once the man becomes very famous, like he becomes an authority, then you find people trying to attach themselves, sit around him, you see. And many of us do not know this. But most of the problems which have arisen in the world of Islam, especially in the world of Shia, especially Marja'iyya, is not from the Marja, it is from the people around the Marja. They have been the worst people, and we have not been told about. And when they come here, they say they are representing so-and-so, we stand up to kiss their hands and their turbans and their foreheads, least knowing that these are the perpetrators of mischief. Now, if you want any documentation on that, I will show you. What each has done in the time of Abu Hasan Isfahani, time of Aga Ibn Jabi, for example, Aga Hakim, Marhum Rahmatullah Alayh, Aga Khuli, Rahmatullah Alayh. What have they done? And how they have perpetrated that mischief. What were they doing? I'm not talking of anything personal, so don't try to misunderstand. That chapter is my own. I'm talking of how the Ummah has been actually harmed. That they have created rifts between Marja and Marja. And in this book that I have here, clearly states that Sayyid Baqir al-Sadr would not have been killed in April 1980 by Saddam Hussein had it not been the interference of the people around other Maraji, people around. This is a problem. And it created a situation where Sayyid Baqir al-Sadr, in spite of all that support that he had, he was murdered. Because Saddam Hussein works to those around. He can't reach the murder. If he reaches the murder will drive him out. The murder doesn't care about Saddam Hussein or whoever, but the people around. So, how to save the Ummah? Saddam Hussein arranges a conference of Shia and Sunni ulama in Baghdad. And the ulama go, Shia ulama go, Sunni ulama go, we don't have a lot of surprise, but the Shia ulama go. To a country where a tyrant ruler is there, and so much has happened to the Shia, has been massacred there, and the haram has been desecrated, everything, yet the ulama go. Shia ulama from Pakistan and India went because they were given free tickets and they sat there at the conference. But when Aga Khuli was told that you will have to attend, he said, that will be the last day of my life. You know what happened to Aga Khuli then? His two son-in-laws, not his own, but the son-in-laws of his son-in-laws, were killed, and their corpses and dead bodies were actually laid at the door of Aga Khuli. Why didn't you attend the conference? Aga said, I am prepared to give blood and my own neck, but I will not attend. Marja is something else, the people around there. I know the sanctity of a marja.
these people who are asking me questions, they think that I have now gone against them. But it's not a question of that. It's the question of administration that I'm talking about. Now, today, if I go to a marja and I ask him about Malaysia or Indonesia or Japan or East Africa for that matter or London or where, what will be the answer? The answer will be, you tell me if you have any information, I will act accordingly after thinking. But if he has a representative of Indonesia, of Malaysia and all that, they will not give fatwas. They are not for that. What I am talking about is that there will be, that has got to be an organization, an institution, where it is headed by a marja, a plea, and then there are mutakhassiseen, that means specialists of various scientists with him, representatives of various organizations or countries with him. They will act the same way as the government was envisaged by Ayatollah Khomeini. What Iran, you see, what is the concept of government in Islam? Is it democracy? Is it autocracy? Is it monarchy? No. Is it theocracy? But if it is theocracy, how is it implemented? Does about religion, proficient, he is the Waliyapati, and there is a consultation, Shura or assembly. Exactly what Iran has done. There is Waliyapati, and there is a parliament. The parliament is watched by Waliyapati. As long as the rules passed are according to Islam, and they don't contravene Islam, and it is meant for the welfare of the Ummah. At that time, the Faqih does not disturb or interfere at all. But the moment anything takes place, it is against Sharia, he speaks. And whatever he speaks is final. Is it not so? Well, exactly this is what I am talking about. Without any government, Marja'iyah has got to be this way. One will be Waliya Faqih, he gives fatwa. In matters of fiqh, I will do his taqeer, all of us will do his taqeer. But in matters of scientific findings, in matters of technological advancements, in matters of economics, in matters of our difficulties, there has got to be a proper guideline to the mujtahid from all quarters. So therefore it has got to be a representative assembly. And that will be called marja'iyah, and not one marja being called marja'iyah. So now, the time is changing fast. Very soon, within the coming 20 years, whether we are still on earth or we are dead, the changes are going to be very fast. If you get a chance, please, read Alvin Toffler sometimes. A small book which is called The Future Shocks. Some of those future shocks have already materialized, we see them. He had forecast The Future Shocks by Alvin Toffler. Read. And he's not the only one who has written, there are many of us. Read. What is going to be the future in this earth, on this earth? How many things are going to change? With every change that occurs, the need has got to arise for a change in the way it is being administered. The honor and the respect of the mujtahid will remain as it is. There's a muqallad for tafid, that's all. But as far as the affairs are concerned, it has got to be governed by those people who know. Now, one sentence which I wrote in my interview was, and there has got to be our participation in the institution. That is something which people do not understand. Our participation. It is there even now, but not officially recognized. It has got to be officially recognized. I mean, so many times the letter comes from a marja to you. Baba Haji Ahmad, what do you say about this particular application which has come from your country? Do you know them? You write to say yes or no. Recommend or don't recommend. It's there. When you go to see Allah, I go to see him. He asks sometimes if he wants to, a particular thing, development, what has happened and why it has happened. We just have to give the answer. But
this is on the, what you might call, passive side. There is a new philosophy which is called, I don't know, in America they have coined this word, proactive. These days I'm reading a new book, just come out of the shelves. It is called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm trying to be effective, you see. But I've got to have 7 habits before I become effective. Thereupon, the first habit is to be proactive. What I believe is, shall we ever have a right to go and suggest to the mujtahid and his institution that, let us have an example, for North America or for England or for East Africa, this is our proposal that you may consider. Do we have this right or don't we? This is what I'm asking for. I'm not asking for usurping the rights of India. It's not the question. Why are people taking it as a matter of Akida? I don't know. Akida is there. The faith is there. But we are now making a proposal, and the time has come that if you don't even accept all that I have said, please sit one day to listen to both the tapes. Because these two tapes, one is there with you, this is another thing. Listen to them. Think over it. And then prepare your own questions if you want to. I'll answer them. Let us discuss it again. Next time when we meet on Marjali, I don't want to speak, I want to discuss. I mean, the discussion in a small room like this can someday have an echo somewhere. Now don't be afraid of what others will think about it, because this dependent syndrome as to what they will think about us is going to ruin us. Most of them don't understand us. Some of the ulama have spoken against the whole idea from the minbar. I know this. I just listened. They haven't understood us. We are not against any of them. On the contrary, we are out to help them. The ummah needs a comprehensive guideline, Baba. For how long is it going to be only the same masala? Whenever I went to Ayatollah Hakim, the Masarakan, Aga, is it halal to wear a necktie? Necktie? You are asking whether we are, as Muslims, allowed to wear. Not one man asking, huh? Till Aga Hakim told me that whenever I see a masala on necktie, I know it has come from East Africa. Because it is from that country only. And once it was Aga Guru Jardin, his personal secretary, who was just minding his own business, was wearing a necktie in Om. So Aga said, Bibi, in ham karawat dar. Karawat means necktie. He said, he is my personal secretary. He is wearing a necktie. Had it been haram, I would have told him to take it off. Once, this one. Second. Aga Brother Islamistan from East Africa. There was a program of laying the foundation stone in the month of Safar for mosque, huh? The question was, is it jais to lay a foundation stone of a mosque in the month of Safar? Aga looks at this. Where does it come from? It's come from East Africa. Other rights. Yes. As many mosques as you can. These are the questions today. What is the question going? Every time. Either it is the problem of our disputes that goes to him, or things like this. The file swells there. Nothing. I haven't come. One fellow, if I make another Bibi Sakina and another of Umm Kulthum and Hazrat Abbas, where should be the money? Should the money be spent? Aga says, yes, these are Indian nazars. Nuzurat-e-Hindi. These are Indian nazars. Because they don't know about Hazrat Umm Kulthum's nazar or Bibi Sakina's nazar. another is lillahi ta'ala. So he answered them, these are nuzurat, the Hindi, that means they are Indian nazar, they believe in it. Tell them to send this money to us, we will appoint one man to go and do ziyarat on behalf of all of them, so that they get thawab. Are Babu, we are not supposed to be that backward and foolish and naive. I mean, something has got to come up now. Wake up now, for the sake of our own honor. And intelligence must be shown. We are not pombabus. So, when I discuss this question with you, I am discussing this with the hope that inshallah ta'ala you will try to understand this in the spirit intended. No disrespect is there at all for anyone. Don't ask me what is happening today. I'm not concerned at all about it. I'm not even asking you to say let us be objective and take one instance in the history and discuss it. I'm not asking. I'm asking you to be thoughtful and mindful about the future. Very soon things will change here and there. What shall we do? I said this once, and I say it again, that Marja'iyah can tomorrow come to England, Marja'iyah can come to East Africa, it can come to India, it can come to Far East, to Middle East. Marja'iyah is not confined to Iran and Iraq. Any great mind or any great Muslim can be born anywhere. Will he do it alone? He cannot do it alone. For anywhere, wherever he is, he has got to do it with the people. He is the waliya faqih, or he is the mustaqim, he will do it. The others will be the specialists in their own rights who will help him to give fatwa or to give guideline in many matters. I'll here conclude it, because we don't have time now after this. Namaz time will be soon in. But in any case, I believe that you take these texts at home, if, both of them, the one which we had this in this second. Listen to it first carefully. And write down your own questions, your objections, your considerations, whatever, any or further explanation needed. We will next time, not next time, I don't mean that when we meet next, we can continue with our subject of Imamat and all that. Whenever you are ready for that, we can still keep one Saturday for it. I again repeat, these are my views, but these are not my own views, in a sense that don't think that I have dreamt of something. It is supported by so many ulama. I have got books and books I can bring here, like Sayyidina Sadr himself, Sayyidina Mutahhar, this Muhammad Baqir Nasiri, Imam al-Khumayni himself, Sayyid Muhammad bin Fadlullah of Beirut. I can bring all that. I am not as abrasive and as scared as Muhammad bin Fadlullah is. Sayyid Fadlullah had the courage to say that how can one man run the administration of the whole Ummah when he is not capable of running his own household? He said that. I have got, yes. And I know what happens. He has been subjected to so many things, Fadlullah. And Shahid al-Mutahari, when he wrote, he had to quit Qom and come and live in Tehran. He came back to Qom only when Ayatollah Khomeini came back. Before that he had to quit. People made it impossible for him to live in. So it is supported by great ulama. I'm putting it up to you with some changes, because there are places where I don't agree with them. We are all free to think. Many of you will not agree with me, so we will at least, with that sort of synthetic thinking, we'll inshallah come to some final conclusion which can be then presented. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Yes,
can I ask the first thing? Who is talking over Marjad is present? We have in this council, having any discussion or having any appointments at present?
Nobody is stopping them from having that sort of council or whatever you call it, whatever we are thinking of. As I said, that from
on this level, the ulama level upward is those who sit around him and those who assist him, and those who are in second or third category, they are not accepting this. Because this, let me put it very openly to you, that this sort of thinking is a challenge to their absolute power. It's a challenge to the power. Not marja, these people who are wielding influence around them. They don't accept this. Whenever we talked about this, the first reaction is, who are you and how qualified are you to speak about this? Second thing is this, that the idea has not gained support from the general public. It has not been disseminated, not propagated thoroughly. If it goes all around the people from all over the world, and if all of them start thinking this way, the change can come in quicker. But at the same time, certain actions and certain steps have been already taken. As you know, Hausa of Qom has got a committee and administrative assembly now. So now, of course, if not fully, some implementation has begun from that level. We here, public, have to agree. And when we have to agree, I don't mean 100%, at least some consensus has got to be reached. We have not. The fault may be lying with people like us who have not yet spoken about this. When I started writing about it in a brief paragraph in Shia International, there was a hullabaloo. There was a row. I had to answer so many questions. And second thing are the people around. Now, I don't want to speak about the people around Mustafa. But I'm telling you that they are the people who have really harmed Marjaya more than served. And this is something which I have read even in the Christian accounts of the clergy, especially in the time of Inquisition and all that. I don't know why it repeats itself even in our history.
It is such a common sense that in any ordinary person who will assume any post, he will immediately start thinking that I should have expert knowledge and guidance for all things. How can we... I don't know, it is something difficult to think that Marijas will reach a big
level. I'm glad that you said it.
But haven't they thought about it? In other words, previously,
I
no Mr. Head, no Marijas.
I have not discussed this with them directly. I have been warned, but not by themselves, by others.
So the information they get at present is just from the people who are with him and around him.
And it is secret. The way they get it is that it's given color. If I get an opportunity, if I talk to a merger himself, for example, whoever he may be, maybe the response will be better. As you say, it's a matter of common sense. Something I cannot talk at the moment.
Isn't there any system made up where various leaders of the country, various countries, can talk on a one-to-one basis with Marja? Although we do that, but they must at least know who is representing, for example, UK, America, Canada. And if that person then visited Marja, isn't there any time allocated to have one-to-one talk?
And time is allocated freely. As far as our Marajas are concerned, meeting with them has got no bureaucracy. You can go and talk to them. If he's busy, you have to wait. Of course, that is quite understandable. But if you have an appointment, he sees you an appointment. But normally, as we go to Iraq or Iran, wherever, anyone who goes on pilgrimage also decides to go and visit the Marja, you know that he can go and see. But the problem is language first, the barrier. That he speaks Persian and Arabic, you speak English and French or whatever, so you have to have a translator. And that, of course, is easily available. But the problem is that you go there, you start talking about things which are only connected with what you, as I told you earlier, halal, haram, and all things, and asking some masail and leave. But if you go and talk about fikr, that means thinking, you are most welcome. He does not stop. We have not made use of any such opportunity. We see. And what I thinking of your question, I would suggest that whenever anyone decides to go and talk to Marja on the basis of the way we've been discussing tonight, why should he be alone? Huh? He should go together with the representative from other countries together. And if he's from UK, he goes with one from North America, one from other part, India and Pakistan. They go together and make a representation to the Marja the way in a united form. And I think it would be received very well received. With the Maharaja themselves, I have found that the thinking is totally on a different level. But we are not living there. Man. They are surrounded by people who would not allow anyone. Now, he asked me a very good question that I can't answer. If I answer, it will be a problem.
But would it not be a logical step from now on that under the banner of world tradition or something, a panel is created that makes representation to the merger with the main problems that the West is, we in the West are facing, and its implications to the
merger. Well, represents the people. And the people has first got to, people have got to be ready to support the World Federation itself. The World Federation can just not go and say, yeah, it is. As I told you, when this Shia International interview was finished, the opposition came from the members of the World Federation. That this is against the Aqidah. And since you have spoken, on behalf of the World Federation, therefore you must withdraw it. So I have got to first prepare myself at home, then go to Marja. Otherwise, what will happen, Bashir? Is that I go and talk to Marja and tomorrow a letter from here goes and says he does not represent us in this thinking. And there's another problem.
The answers we see given to scientific and medical questions by our Marjas. Now, they must have done their own research before they gave us the answers. In other words, they have access to such facilities.
There are very big, very good scientists in Iraq and Iran. They are very good thinkers. Today, one of the world's authority on nuclear science is in Iran. He is Iraq. He's Iraq. And the day when I was in 1982, he was with me. You see? And he was not executed only because America intervened and said, don't execute this man, for he is an asset. They wanted him to come to States. The day he was released, he ran away across the border to Iran. Otherwise, they wanted him for themselves. He is in Iran, he is today, we say, Bakr al-Hakim. So they have, I don't see that they have. But they have got to be there always. Not only for answering questions, Mustafa, they have got to be there for at least planning.
Ummah.
I say for Muslim Ummah, let us say, I say for humanity at large. I mean, if I am here to be exposed at the advancements controlled by Christian thinking or Jewish thinking, but to my own benefit, why should not the Christian friends of mine benefit from Islamic way of thinking if it is to their benefit? It's just the same thing.
Of course, they should have the authority whereby they are recognized by Muslims, not only Shia, isn't it?
It's not right to believe or assume that they don't have those brains. They have, mashallah. They are very good thinkers, very good writers, very good scientists, technology they have. Qualified here, some of them. In England, some of them in North America.
and of course gifted. So it's not there. But when I say this, it is actually what I meant was that they can tap the resources, intellectual resources and others, from all over the world. It's not only from Iran, Iraq. But where is the opportunity? Today, the most tragic point is this, that our scientists, we have certain scientists, we have mathematicians, great mathematicians in Pakistan, for example. Right? Abdul Salam is a scientist. Right? There's one mathematician in Pakistan. There might be something in Saudi Arabia. There might be some in Indonesia, Malaysia, wherever it is. East Africa, here, where. Muslims. Right? These are the people, rather than being closer to Marja, they are even farther away from Islam, except one or two. Because they have been actually brainwashed. Islam can make use of that brain, at the same time make them good Muslims, they have been brainwashed. If you get near to the clergy, they will make you otherworldly and you have to forget everything. It's not so. After all, what is the standard of piety and taqwa? Is it only mosque and imambara and tasbih, or has it got something else like service to humanity? This is that. So, think over this. Let us come again, inshallah.
Inshallah, we break now for namaz, and we meet inshallah after month of Mahi Muharram. Once we decide the time of the wind and the day, we inshallah.
We are.